Welcome to ITE 1, Module 2, Part 2.
All right, sounds good. We're going to talk about using hand tools and how to use them. We want to use the proper type and size of screwdrivers by matching it to the screw. So you want to take your hand and feel the screw, because each screw has a different type of hole in the top. So you'll be able to feel the cross in a Phillips head, or the straight line in the flathead screw, or if it's a really big one and you can turn it by hand, that's a thumb screw. You can also use a large flathead screw to turn that as well if you need to, if it's just too tight. Because, you know what, some of us girls, some guys can really tighten up those thumb screws, and we might need to actually do that. So, there you go.
Just a point here. You might all laugh about this. We're saying you've got to use the correct screwdriver for the correct screw. Can anybody tell me why this is so important and why it really isn't? Well, it is kind of a joking matter, but why is it so important to use the correct screw with the correct screwdriver? What happens if you use the wrong one? Say, for example, a Phillips head in a Torx bit, for example. Yes, Sean H.
You can script the screw. And it'll be just...
And what happens when that happens?
Stuck there. Oh, it gets stuck there and won't move and...
Yeah, it basically...
You're getting it out.
It's difficult to take the screw out. It destroys the whole head of the screw and you can't get a grip on it. And in really bad cases, you actually have to drill the screws out. And believe me, you don't want to be doing that on computer equipment. It's not cool.
Yeah.
The other thing, I'm going to make a quick point, then I'm going to shut up. Well, at least for a little while anyway. The quality of your screwdrivers is vitally important. You can go down to Best Ripoff and buy like a $5 technician's kit, as Grace has suggested, and the screwdrivers are okay. But nothing beats Sid Chrome or, what's that other mob? Tulux or Stanley screwdrivers. The really good quality screwdrivers will get screws out that other screwdrivers will just skip over the top of. So, okay. Well, Josh is just going to say that. Yeah, there's a little snap-on screwdrivers. I haven't had water yet. And you can actually use little teeth that actually grab onto the screw and can pull them out and stuff. So they're very cool. And there are, you can also get screw extraction tools from JCar and other electronics stores that will get the screws out for you. So
JCar is to us Americans like Radio Shack / Best Buy. But actually, a tad bit better priced. So yes, don't do that, or you will strip the screws, and you won't be able to get them out. Don't over tighten the screws, because that's also you may also strip the screws. You want to make sure they're good and tight so that they hold down what you're trying to screw in. But you don't need to over tighten them. Once they're good and tight, stop turning. It's okay. If it doesn't fit, don't force it. If excessive force is needed to put in or take out a component, something is likely to be wrong. You might want to stop and take a look and see if it's caught on something, or if you have seated it wrong, don't keep pulling or pushing. You will break something. Talk about magnetized tools. This is in your test. Magnetized tools should not be used around electrical devices, although for opening up a case and stuff and opening up a computer chassis, I do it. No, it's not recommended. In your test it says no, don't do it. But if you're careful and not like opening up a hard drive or something, it's generally okay, but at your own risk. Pencils should not be used inside the computer. Anyone know why?
I'm not sure why you would even put a, why you would consider putting a pencil in the computer.
Oh, people do.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Is it
because of the lead?
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you get traces of the lead on the pencil or on the computer, it is conductive, and you can short out stuff with those little bitty traces of lead.
Now, modern pencils do not contain lead. They contain graphite. They don't put lead in pencils anymore. That's a misnomer. So just so you know, it's not lead, it's graphite. But graphite is conductive.
And it can short out components, and you will never... You may not... Yeah, you'll never find out what caused that problem, because it's just little trace bits of it, and it's very, very hard to figure out what happened. Also, do not use a needle nose plier to remove screws. That's what screwdrivers are for. Because you can also damage the components around it. Be careful not to cut wires. And
just a point. A lot of techs will tend to strip wires with their teeth. Now, we don't recommend you do that. But as I was going to say, if you especially are going to do this because you're not listening to us, just make sure there's no power going through the other end, because believe me, that bites. So don't strip live wires with your teeth. And in fact, don't strip wires with your teeth if you can help it at all, because it's not OH&S safe.
Don't use screwdrivers as a prying tool. You've got parts retrievers and small other various little hand tools to do that. As I said, anything that has to be forced is a problem. And remember that needle nose pliers and tweezers can remove small parts, but you'll probably want to use your hands if you don't have any vision, because you might scrape something or hit something you don't want to actually hit. Be careful not to scratch the small metal circuit board traces with your needle nose pliers as you're going in to grab those parts. That's why usually I use my hands, because it's easier to not scratch things. And now I think we're going to talk about cleaning. Oh, one more thing here.
Never, under any circumstances.
Yeah. Here's a technique that I've never used. Has anyone ever done this, and does it work very well? Instead of using a magnetic screwdriver, you stab a screw through a piece of masking tape to hold it in place.
Or a blob of blue tack on the end of the screwdriver. Does a blob of blue tack go to blue tack? Just a little bit of blob of blue tack on the end of the screwdriver, and that'll hold the screw on as well, and sort of squelches out and holds the screw on. Works great for really fine work. Blue tack, Yoo-hoo tack, power tack, I don't know what you guys call it. Poster sticky tack.
Yeah, it's sticky tack. The stuff they put on your pencil so you could hold it in occupational therapy or whatever.
We actually had little guides that went over the pencil, like special triangle guides that you slid over the pencil too. Yeah, no.
Anyway, so yes, now we are going to talk about proper cleaning materials. So you can do that. I'm going to have to try that at some point, because that may actually work and be pretty cool.
I was going to say one small point. If you're going to actually do screwdriver stuff, practice. Because you are going to drop it the first 11-5 times that you do it, but you will get better with practice. So practice, you know, taking screws in and out of something if you've got something you can do that with. If you are using magnetic screwdrivers, practice how much pressure you need on the screwdriver to actually lift up the screws out of the boards and stuff. Unfortunately, we'd like to fly you all over to the academy and give you hands-on training with screwdrivers, but in the interim, we can just give you tips instead.
Yeah, we just completely destroyed a $139 computer by shorting out the motherboard. or something.
No, we didn't. No. No, no, don't blame Kieran for stuff he didn't do.
I'm not blaming him, I'm just saying.
No.
It doesn't work.
What happened, the truth of the story is that we overloaded the power supply, which was only 270 watts max, and that was because we tried to put two hard drives in it. So let's not go and blame Kieran and Josh.
I'm not blaming anybody.
Or they'll hunt you down on your way to the cafeteria.
Yeah, it shorted the motherboard. So we've got this perfectly good computer that if you were here, you could take apart and practice with your screwdrivers as much as you like. That was the point of the story. keeping your computer clean inside and out is a very good idea. Dirt can cause problems with the physical operation of the fans, buttons, and other mechanical components. We want to use mild cleaning solutions and lint-free cloths to clean the computer cases, the outside of the monitor, LCD screen, and the mouse. We can use compressed air to clean heat sinks. You can use isopropyl alcohol and lint-free swabs to clean the RAM, also the CPU. If you've got an old CPU that you want to clean the heat sink paste off of, you'll want to use the isopropyl alcohol to clean that and the bottom of your heat sink. They say you can use a handheld vacuum cleaner with a brush attachment to clean a keyboard. Honestly, I just got to buy a keyboard cleaning brush. They're like $5, and you don't have to worry about sucking the keys off of your keyboard.
Oh, well, it's only a little vacuum cleaner, not the Dyson. We did have somebody who Dysoned their vacuum cleaner, Dysoned their ThinkPad, and it lifted the touchpad off the bottom of the keyboard. And so he had to open up the vacuum cleaner and take all the little bits of the pad out of the Dyson and attach them back to the laptop. So, little handheld vacuum cleaner, not the carpet one.
Another bit of common sense. When we're cleaning, we want to shut down the device that we're cleaning. So, turn off the computer, unplug the power supply, remove the battery if it's a laptop, and go for it. Disconnect any attached peripherals. Another common sense thing, electronic components should not be near water. We're not going to pour any of the cleaning solution directly onto any of the parts we're cleaning. We put some onto a cloth, and not a whole lot, we don't want to soak the cloth, and we apply the cloth to the component that we're cleaning, such as a monitor. If we're going to use water, you can use demineraled water to clean keyboards with the cloth. Only use products specifically designed for cleaning computer components.
Well, let's have a look at that chat message. That was just a massive chat explosion there.
He was talking about seeing computer cleaning kits with the compressed air and the brushes.
He could have done that.
Just put your name in and we'll let you say something. Like, otherwise we'll be talking along and it'll go, and we'll go, what's that? And then by the time we alt tab and find out what it was, you just type your name in, like Sean H or whatever, and we'll stop, and you can say something.
So compressed air can be used to remove dust from slots and holes on the laptop and between the keys on a keyboard. It says to use compressed air rather than a vacuum. I agree, because the vacuum can produce ESD, even if it's one of those ESD-free vacuums that's not supposed to produce any. It produces some, and remember, you only need a very little bit to damage your computer. You can get cleaning solutions for the outside of your case and monitor at computer stores. You want to make sure to use a non-abrasive cleaner. That's about it. Basically, moisten the cloth with it, soft, lint-free cloth, and clean away. As I said, don't spray go ahead.
I was just going to say, I can see myself doing this. If you're not sure whether you're going to be able to get it on the cloth without soaking the cloth, maybe have someone else do it.
Use a paper towel. That way, if you mess one up, throw it out. Start over.
So paper towels are okay.
Just doing the outside of
I guess they would be lint-free.
If you're just going to do the outside of the case. Not such a good idea on a screen. You can get these pre-done wipes for screens, and they've got the solution already on it. So if you're worried about your hand coordination, you can use those. And I do. I got some for my laptop screen, and they worked marvelously. Okay, that's the end of Module 2. Does anyone have any questions about Module 2 before we go on to the quiz?
I have a question about the worksheet for Module 2.
Go for it.
What do we listen to do the disassembly one if we don't have a computer actually?
Audio Labs. There's some Audio Labs of complete disassembly and reassembly, which you will be very familiar with through Chapter 2 and 3 as you do these labs.
Later on today, we will be getting our partially sighted assistants and an Olympus DM520, and we're going to have some hot fun with a BIOS so you guys can hear what it sounds like to change the boot order.
Cool.
Yeah.
Is that Audio Labs in the current audio folder, or have I got to shift the sim link?
I'm not sure.
Audio Labs and Recordings is in the / audio, I think. Because I think I saw it there.
Yeah, it's
okay.
Morning.
Okay.
It's like there 2 days ago.
It is.
Cool. Okay. I'm doing my job.
Yay! I thought you had. I just wasn't sure because I haven't looked. Bad me, I would just have gone in to look for worksheets and modify worksheets and stuff. Oh, one other thing that you guys might like to have that is available to you for any of these is a template that Alex, one of our previous students, made up for himself. It is a .dot file, so you would need to be using Microsoft Word, and it just has the questions and what you need to answer in there. Now, you will want to be looking at the worksheets as well, because these templates are not perfect, he said, and you might have a question that is missing out of the worksheet, possibly. They should be all good, but we're not going to certify them as picture perfect. If there is a problem with them and you are using them, let us know and we'll fix them. But if you want templates so that you know which questions you need to answer and have a good place to fill them out, let us know. And we've got them for Discovery 1 and ITE 1, and we'll get those to you. They'll probably go up on the site, actually. But especially for Module 3, where there are some labs where there are no questions to answer, these templates might be extremely helpful to you.
Just let me hit stop and start so I can just do that as a slice for part 2.
Quiz
I'll do the quiz first then. Okay.
All right.
Is anyone downloading?
Any other questions?
Or comments?
Or anything? Gosh, this braille display is absolutely, this advanced bar is absolutely the stiffest thing. All right.
That's because I use the whiz wheels, but we've already talked about that.
Oh, God. All right. Anyway.
Then you end up scrolling down too far.
Yeah, oh, me too. Okay, I'm not.
No, it does one display width per click. You just be gentle.
Yeah, if you're good enough to make it only do that one click, you're golden. If you're not, as I'm not, you're in trouble. So, yeah. All right, quiz time. Everybody in your chat windows. If anyone is not. Melanie, if you want to get into your chat window. She may not be with us at the moment. Okay. All right. Question one. What is the minimum level of electric static discharge that a person can normally feel? Is it A, 5 volts, B, 1,000 volts, C, 3,000 volts, or D, 10,000 volts? Right. Cyber Lollipop for everybody. C's absolutely right. That's in your test, too. So that's totally a free question that everybody's going to get right. All right. Which recommendation should be followed first when a fire in the workplace is out of control? Main three words here. Out of control. A. Try to use the elevator to get to the lowest floor faster. B. Contact emergency services for help. C. Use the company water system to stop the fire from extending to other areas. D. Try to control the fire with proper extinguishers. Answer now. Absolutely. Contact emergency services for help. It's also pretty much implied that you get out, get down the stairs as fast as you can and get yourself out of there. Don't stand there and wait for them to show up and be burnt. All right, question three. Which two tools are recommended for cleaning a PC? Choose two, and we'll do yes or no answers here. A, antibacterial spray, yes or no? That's correct. B, compressed air.
Is it screens we're cleaning?
We're cleaning any parts of a PC. It's just general basic PC. So yes, that's right, compressed air. C, mild abrasive detergent. No. Isn't that kind of an oxymoron anyway, guys? All right. How about a nylon brush? No is absolutely right. How about rubbing alcohol?
Mild abrasive?
That's what I was saying. What?
I've seen one.
Okay. Sure. No, that's right. F, soft, lint-free cloth. No. Why? No. Yes. 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 Why? Yes, a soft, lint-free cloth is a great idea for cleaning. Okay, good job, everybody. Question 3. How does a technician discharge electrical static buildup? Is it A, touching a painted part of the computer case? B, touching an unpainted part of the computer case? C, touching an anti-static wrist strap before touching computer equipment? D, touching an anti-static mat before touching any computer equipment? Answer now. For everybody who answered B, that is a great answer. To actually ground yourself and get rid of any electrical static discharge, we touch the unpainted part of the case. And we attach an anti-static wrist strap to an unpainted part of the case. So touching an anti-static wrist strap or a mat really isn't going to do you any good. It will keep you grounded, but if you've got the buildup already, you want to always touch the unpainted part of the case before doing any work. Go ahead.
What are good unpainted? I know we talked last week about the power supply, fan, grill, but what are other good unpainted places to go?
Depends on the computer case.
Yeah.
Some computer cases are made of like perspex. If you've got an I'm compensating for something computer case, then they're usually made of perspex, and they've got lights and all sorts of things in them. And unfortunately, they are an insulator, so you really need to look for a metal part of the case that you're that you can touch. Usually,
try a drive bay.
That's assuming it's open, though.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to open the case until you've grounded yourself. That's the point. You don't open the thing up and then touch an unpainted section. You want to touch an unpainted section before you open the computer case up, otherwise you could be holding a charge.
A lot of the
I'm just thinking, okay, I can't tell what's painted and what isn't, so...
The painted parts are usually rougher, like the sides of your case may be painted. The back I.O., the back plate where the I.O. ports is usually metal. You can touch there.
Who's got a painted case? None of mine are.
I've seen a painted...
All cases are painted. If they're metal, they're actually coated. Okay. It's anodized. This one's still conductive, right? The top of this one is still conductive. Only if you scratch it back to bare metal. Technically, they're not conductive through the paint, but the paint is very thin and they scratch quite easily.
We're just talking about that most of the cases are anodized, which means that they are coated in something. Very thin, and generally they scratch pretty easily, but that's why they're saying touch an unpainted section. So usually the bracket for the I.O. panels and the power supply grill fan and stuff tends to be... Yeah.
I usually, when I'm working in a case and have put something down or picked something up, or if my strap has come off, I'll touch one of the edges of the case, actually. But that's just me, if the case is open. That's just what I find the easiest thing to do. Go ahead. Okay, never mind. Okay, question 4. Which device is designed specifically to protect computers and electrical devices from excess electrical voltage? Is it A, power strip? B, standby power supply? C, surge protector? D, uninterruptible power supply? It would be C, because I believe there are surge protectors that are not on a power strip and only do one outlet. No, I've never seen one myself. But
you buy them all over the place in Australia. The Belkin, I've got too much money in my wallet one, you can have for $89.95. And generally they are a single one. The fact is, because we're using a higher voltage in Australia and higher current, you tend to need more of a surge suppressor than you would in a little itty bitty power board. And you pay a lot for a power board protected by a decent surge suppressor.
In America, they usually all have them on the power strips, but not necessarily in other countries.
But I wonder how many joules they can actually take, though. They probably can't take as much energy as ours.
I don't know, because they don't need to, but most of them all have the surge suppressors in them.
They used to be power strips with no surge protection, but they're not very common anymore.
Okay, because over here we tend to have an earth leakage circuit breaker, which is not a surge suppressor. So if you actually connect active to earth, you'll actually trip the little button at the end, and then you press the button to reset it, but that's not a surge suppressor.
Oh, we've actually got the surge protector. In fact, most people in America will interchange the term power strip with surge protector. And so I was quite surprised to learn that all of the power strips over here, most of them don't have a surge suppressor on them. He left. Okay. It's very interesting. All right, question 5. And this will be a yes or no. Which three effects can be observed on computer components as a result of climate? So choose three, yes or no. The first one, components overheat if it is too hot. Yeah. Obviously. Okay. Moisture damages computer parts if it is too humid. Yes, that's right. Components work too slowly if it is too cold. That's correct. The risk of ESD increases if the humidity is too low. Absolutely. Because you've all had those nice Midwestern winters, I'm guessing, where there's no humidity, and you walk across carpet, and you start shocking everything in sight. Or your nice wool sweater helps you to do that as well. And the other two we're just not even going to do, because we've already got our three. So the other two that were no was, or one that was no, is... components overheat if the humidity is too low, and that's not true. And electrical status discharge can happen more often if the humidity is too high. This is not true either. Okay, number 6. Which condition refers to a sudden and dramatic increase in voltage, which is usually caused by lightning? And this is also in your test, I believe. Is it A, brownout, B, sag, C, spike, or D, surge? D is absolutely right. Oh, C is absolutely right. I'm sorry. It is a spike.
That's what's absolutely going to throw me, yeah. Is that difference.
Yeah, that's in your test, and I actually answered D when I first did it, so nobody feel bad if you did, because I did. and...
The trick, because the answer is spike, isn't it?
Yeah.
The key is sudden. Surges don't have to be sudden.
There we go. And spikes can also often happen when the power comes back on after a blackout. Okay, that's the end of our quiz. Any questions on any of that? Right as the power returns, you may get a spike if you're in a blackout situation.
That's not the surge?
I think it's...
I'm sort of thinking it would be more defined as a surge, because spike is usually caused by lightning, whereas a surge is usually something that happens from the power company. I'd be saying you get a surge when the power comes back. Yeah, I'm with Stacey on that one.
Okay. You may be right. I thought it was...
Yeah, I think it's surge also.
Okay, you may be right. You probably are. I know that surge is fluctuations in power, but I think it also might have said that the suddenness of the power coming on and being having too high a voltage was from that, but I could be absolutely wrong. So, never mind.